You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I am Smoking Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So, it's that time of the show where we fire up a cigar, and we are recording this weekend over the 4th of July weekend, so we decided to go with, well, this is your part of it. What are we smoking this week, Brad?
We are smoking the Camacho, the 5-year aged and bourbon barrel.
It's the American barrel aged.
I'm getting to that.
That's what I was saying. Yeah, it's holiday weekend. We should smoke an American cigar.
Yep. So your wrapper here is American Broadleaf with an American Broadleaf binder with American Broadleaf, Pennsylvania Maduro, and Honduran Corojo filler. And is with a Dominican Republic origin. So yeah, like, a lot of your American tobaccos in here.
Yeah, and the thing that makes it kind of unique is that the, you know, not the whole cigar, but some of the Corojo leaves are aged 6 years and then finished off 5 months in a bourbon barrel. So it's not an infused cigar, so it's not, you know, got that overpowering whiskey flavor, you know, it just was aged in a, you know, former whiskey barrel. So there's like the hints of bourbon instead of like an overpowering flavor of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting much more of a woody flavor, more so than I am, you know, any kind of a bourbon or what you would, you know, traditionally think.
Yeah, it's definitely more like a charred wood, earth, a little bit of pepper flavor. But yeah, there's just like, especially on the retrohale, there's just that touch of bourbon, a little bit of sweetness.
Yeah, I mean, so far, you know, just being into the first third of the cigar, I mean, the strength, I would definitely give this a medium strength so far. I'm definitely hoping some of the more spicier notes come out. And you know, we are pairing this with a bourbon itself. I mean you're smoking a bourbon barrel cigar. You can't do this without a bourbon. So
yeah, we got a little bullet bourbon to enhance the cigar flavor.
So, you know, the smoothness of the cigar with you know, the warmth of the bourbon here. I mean, there's a pairing and it's adding a little bit complexity, and I think it's adding to the cigar because as I, you know, just took my first couple of inhales of the cigar, I wanted a little bit more of that bite. I wanted, you know, a little bit more hint of the alcohol or the bourbon flavor
itself.
Yeah,
if you're expecting an infused cigar flavor, which is actually, you know, cured in actual whiskey, yeah, this is not what you're going to be expecting. I mean, if you've ever smoked any of the infused cigars, like I said, this one is just, you know, aged in a barrel, so it picks up more of that charred oak flavor that you would get from a whiskey barrel with this, like, maybe slight remnants of that bourbon flavor instead of a full hit of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think this cigar here would, you know, not only does it pair well with a bourbon, but, you know, if I was outside by my smoker doing, you know, either brisket, rib, some kind of smoked barbecue or something, I could see this cigar complementing that very well. I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting reminded of. Here is, you know, being outside, being around, you know, the burning charcoal and, you know, just some of those aromas and that essence. And, you know, for me, being a grill master, I mean, this cigar is definitely appealing to all of my senses.
All right. And with that, we will get into the show proper here. And this is going to be our Terminator episode. So I advise you that if you don't want to hear me do a bad Terminator accent at least 4 times during this episode, you may just want to skip it to next week.
And if you haven't seen Genesis yet, then spoiler alert, you have been warned.
Yeah, and we'll, like I said, once we get into we're talking Genesis deeply, we will let you know that, you know, spoilers are ahead. So, you know, like I said, that'll be kind of toward the end of the discussion. So we'll give you plenty of warning to let you know you can skip ahead. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We'll be right back. And we're back. You ready to talk about some futuristic stuff and the end of humanity?
I mean, dude, I almost feel like you're trying to lead me into a science article or something with that one. I'm a little bit confused.
Well, you know, I always talk about, you know, the impending robot overlords taking over, and my irrational fear of AI stems from the Terminator, so it's only fitting, especially with the new movie coming out, that we finally
Well, I mean, it depends on which side of the battle you're in. I mean, you know, if you've got a Terminator there to protect you, then you're okay. I mean, it's Skynet that's ultimately your biggest threat, I think.
Before we get into the show proper, just want to ask a request of the listeners. If you're listening to this episode, please go to iTunes, leave us a review, rate the show. That's how this, you know, gets heard by more people, and, you know, they help people find us, so we can grow the Cigar Nerd brand and get the word out there. I noticed, I would check the other day, and someone actually left us a review and a rating. I'm like, I can't remember their name right offhand because I don't have it in front of me, but you know who you are. Thank you very much. You know, the rest of you, come on, leave us some reviews. Make us internet famous. Or we'll go back in time.
And be forewarned, there are bad Terminator impressions to be had all throughout this episode, and it's going to be horrible. My ears are already bleeding. I have to listen to this jack off like 87 hours before we ever even get to this episode. So,
yeah, Skynet will send someone back in time to kill us before we start recording this podcast.
But are we back in time, or are we just in a future that never happened? Ooh.
Or is this the Matrix?
Red pill or blue pill?
Green pill.
Okay,
it's minty flavored.
Purple pill. Get a little bit about the most worlds.
Freaking Eminem song.
I mean, I wasn't trying to take it there, but all right, cool. So, anyway.
So purple pills, that's what pops in my head. All right, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1984, The Terminator.
Yeah, one of James Cameron's, you know, probably one of my up there on favorite works. I mean, I love this film. It's another one of those that if I catch it on TV or if somebody's playing a DVD of this, I sit down and I watch it from start to finish every single time. Yeah, like, I mean, it captivates me, it enthralls me, and I don't know, man. This is really one of those films that kind of put Schwarzenegger on the map. You know, I'm pretty young in retrospect to, you know, some of the guys when we're talking about these conversations and stuff. So people may, you know, remember him from prior films, but this is the one film that really stands out when I hear his name.
Yeah, because, I mean, Conan the Barbarian had come out before this. So this wasn't like, you know, he was actually kind of on the rise when this movie came out. And, you know, if anyone hasn't seen The Terminator already, briefly, it's about in the future, I believe it's 2029, we finally beat the Skynet artificial intelligence that has nuked all of humanity because it became self-aware and decided we should be eradicated. Well, in its last-ditch effort to stop from being wiped out, it sends a Terminator, the T-800 Model 101, back to 1984 to kill the leader of the Resistance mother, Sarah Connor, before he's even born.
Yeah, and dude, the first film, as far as the time frame, it's not too hard to follow. I mean, there's a little bit of time jumping and everything, but it's pretty easy to wrap your head around. Later on in the Terminator series, not so much.
It's weird. Yeah, one of the things that, I mean, this, like you said, James Cameron, written and directed by James Cameron, who has gone on to make huge films, and this was probably one of his earlier, you know, giant successes. I mean, it only cost $6 million to make and made, like, you know, I think $78 million. So for a low-budget film at the time, it definitely paid off. And, of course, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Michael Biehn as Kyle Reese, which was the Resistance fighter sent back in time to save Sarah Connor.
And the infamous Linda Hamilton.
Yes.
Which, you know, this is a film that kind of put Linda Hamilton on the map, you know, as far as her actress career goes. But one of the things I thought was cool was this film was actually selected by the Library of Congress for preservation in American National Film Registry, being deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. So, you know, when the Earth no longer seems to exist, we have all these DVDs that whoever, you know, comes after us will find and be like, man, no wonder these people got eradicated.
Yeah,
the Terminator comes back and, you know, finds a film about the Terminator or something. I don't know.
That's how Skynet gets the idea. And surfing the nets and finds
they'll the never suspect that, you know, this movie, golly, I mean, there's five movies. What is that, you know? Synchology? I don't know. Is that a word? I'm just trying to think of sync as in five. I don't know. Like, am I making shit up here?
Probably. We'll let that slide. But one of the funny things is, it, you know, almost wasn't Arnold in this movie. Because originally the studio wanted a known actor, like a big-name actor for Reese. They hadn't cast the Terminator yet. And they wanted Arnold to be Kyle Reese.
Yeah, and I couldn't see.
No.
I couldn't, knowing the films
and
now.
And even James Cameron says, like, there's like no way. I mean, if I made him Reese, I would have to find somebody bigger than Arnold to play the Terminator. So it would make sense that he, you know, is the underdog in that fight. So he just, you know, they agreed to go meet with Arnold just to make the studio shut up. And he even had a plan. He's like, I'm going to piss this dude off and start a fight with him just so I can go back to the studio and say, nah, it's not going to work out with this guy. And then he meets Arnold, and Arnold has all these, yes, the Terminator should be like this and this. And, you know, he went back, and he was kind of impressed with him. And so when he went back to the studio, he's like, no, he should not be Kyle Reese, but he would make a hell of a Terminator. And as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting in reading, you know, some of the information and doing research for this episode, which, you know, they were talking about, you know, kind of the language barriers. So Arnold was having trouble pronouncing, you know, certain words. So like his infamous, you know, I'll be back. You know, he was like Arnold was trying to rewrite the script to, you know, be more proper so he could say it better.
He's
and
like,
Cameron's
I'm a computer. I wouldn't say contractions and I cannot say I'll.
Yeah.
So like, you know, he's like, let me do I will be back. And he's like, no, do it. It's freaking written. So he said he literally had to practice that I'll like over and over again until he got it. And they said even his, like, you know, Austrian accent they thought was kind of good for the Terminator because it almost had
almost
robotic quality to it.
Yeah,
and it was like almost like they had not got, you know, the speech software perfect. It's still kind of not if no one had been exposed to the Austrian accent, it sounds like maybe a computer that, you know, is not fully synced to speak normal English.
Yeah, I mean, dude, these freaking films, I mean, they're just absolutely phenomenal.
And he only says like 100 words in the whole movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the first, he wasn't a very dialogue-heavy character whatsoever.
He's
but,
basically like a futuristic
Jason Voorhees. I mean, you are
Jason
programmed,
Voorhees.
And although he did say a few more words than Jason Voorhees.
But still, he's like the unstoppable, you know, silent killer. And that, you know, that whole line is like, he can't be reasoned with, he can't be stopped. I mean, that's... Yeah, he can't be.
I mean, he's programmed, you know, for one purpose and one purpose only. I mean, he's the Terminator.
Exactly, and I mean, I love when the way that the movie was shot too. Like when you see at first both of them like showing up in the past. I mean, there's just like a brief dialogue about what the purpose of it, but you don't really know who the bad guy is until, you know, you see Arnold start, you know, ripping dudes' hearts out.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably you know. I don't know. What do you say? 30 or so minutes in? I mean, like...
Yeah, until you see him, like, gun down the first Sarah Connor, you really don't know who the good guy and who the bad guy is, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, just the... I love just some of the opening scenes with, you know, once he appears and some of the street thugs and everything else. I mean, he just does work on them. I'm just like,
yeah.
Hell's yeah.
And if you notice that gang of people, one of them is a young Bill Pullman from movies such as Twister and Aliens.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
And the other guy, and I can't remember his name, but he played like a bad guy in like every 80s movie. He was in that movie Cobra with Stallone. He always played the alien bounty hunter on X-Files because he's like this really big, weird-looking dude. And he was like the other gang member. He's almost as like, you know, big as, at least as tall as Arnold.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, definitely an action film, but I mean, there's a lot of dynamics that go on, you know, with the Terminator films that I think that's one reason why this film for me will be one that stands the test of time. Like, I won't ever get tired of seeing the Terminator films. Well, yeah. I say that with the exception of maybe Rise of the Machines, and we can probably scratch Salvation from that.
We're
but that's
including
later
the
on.
First two movies in that. Yeah. I'll never be tired of it. Yeah, I mean, it... yeah, the whole, like, you know, and then, like, the love story between Kyle
and Sarah.
And Sarah. I mean, hypothetically, you're, and, you know, I mean, literally, he falls in love with a girl based on her picture. You know, I mean, he volunteered to go back and save her because of this picture that John gave him, and, you know, he falls in love with someone who he has never met. And
at
is
that time,
to
it's, I mean.
Go on basically a suicide mission because there's really no way to come back from the past.
But, I mean, I think John has, you know, told him so much about, you know, Sarah and everything that, dude,
I guess he sold it to him because, if John knew that Reese was his father, because she kind of debates that at the end of the movie, like, am I going to tell him about that, you know, Kyle's his father or whatnot? So, I mean, if he knows going ahead of time, he's like, all right, I got to sell this dude on this so he'll go back in time and save my mom and be my dad. So, I mean, it was like, you know, futuristic Tinder. He had to, like, you know.
Yeah, which I think you got to be careful, though, because the other hint was you can't reveal too much, because if you reveal too much, then, you know, you're in that weird predicament of, crap, I may change, you know, some course of history, you know, through some random event if I already know what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, I think there's a fine line of need to know.
That's what happens when you get in, like, weird time travel movies, because if he had never gone back and never told her about the oncoming apocalypse, you know, she was very much a innocent, young, typical horror movie girl at the beginning of it.
I mean, dude, yeah, she was just your average, everyday waitress. I mean, no special skills, no nothing. I mean, just,
and,
hey,
you know, and
I'm going to make
by the end of it, of going through with, you know, dealing with the Terminator and, you know, the stuff that Reese taught her, I mean, she's, you know, kind of a badass story. Like, you know, when she's like, you know, trying to, he's all passed out. She's like, get on your feet, soldier. You know, you see that transition of,
yeah, the, I mean, you start seeing those leadership skills develop
to,
and,
you know, turning into the badass that we'll see, you know, later in the series. So what was your original impressions of the Terminator? Do you have any, you remember the first time you saw it?
Probably the first time I saw it, I was, oh my gosh. I don't know. I was maybe 10, 11 years old. I don't know. I mean, I can remember the first time I saw Arnold as a Terminator, and I mean, it almost struck fear into my heart. I'm just like, holy shit, this is a monster of a man. Like, I mean, there was a certain level. I mean, it was kind of a toss up. He was up there for me, almost like the scale of a Rocky Balboa or something like that. I mean, almost like a godlike, you know.
Yeah, I think his portrayal too is so good because it. I mean, he has no emotional reaction. He just keeps moving and keeps killing. And that, you know, if he had been more, you know, emotional about it, I think it would have
changed the dynamic.
The
you know,
the fact that he's like, you know, no expression on his face, just gunning down people like right and left.
I mean, he does exactly what a machine is programmed to do. I mean, you got a set line of code, and that's all you can do. I mean, you know, yeah, physically on the outside, all he is just, you know, skin cells and a skin suit, but on the inside, it's all machines. So he sold that character to a T. Had it have played out any differently, I don't think this film would have had near the success that it did.
Yeah, when I went back and rewatched it last night, yeah, I noticed this little ticks and stuff he does to, like, when he goes into the police station and tries to find Sarah, and they're like, you know, come back later, she's giving a statement. You see him, like, he looks around at the wall and kind of makes a judgment of, like, all right, what will it take to bust through this door? You know, because that's probably bulletproof glass or whatever. So he's like, you know, looks around like, okay. He's like, I'll be back. Yeah. And then comes back with a freaking Nova and runs it through the front door.
I mean, and that's one of the beauties of the Terminator films. I mean, the entire time that he's out, it's not just hunting and killing. No, he's learning his environment. He's blending in better. I mean, he is becoming that much more of a specialized killer.
The one thing, though, looking back at this, the 1984 technology, I mean, and the effects were done by Stan Winston Effects, which, you know, have done, I mean, he's won several Oscars for his work. The scenes where it's like a close-up of his face where he's showing, like, severe damage where you can see the robotics or anything, it's so obvious that it's, I mean, it looks amazing, but you can really tell the difference when it's Arnold with makeup or an animatronic head.
Yes.
It's just, the animatronic head just looks so, like, dead when it's moving around. And I mean, they kind of, in the later movies, he's like, oh, my skin will heal itself over time. But in the first one, like, so they had to explain that later, but in the first one, as he gets damaged, I guess his flesh is starting to die. So you start seeing flies crawling on him, and like one of the neighbors starts complaining about the smell. And that's one of my favorite scenes where the janitor knocks on the door. He's like, what, you got a dead cat in there? And then it shows like the Terminator vision. It's like proper response and like reads off all the, like, no, what? What are you talking about? At the very end, like, fuck you, asshole.
Yes.
And just like reads through that whole list of stuff and like, oh, yep, that's my proper response for this situation.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the technology. I mean, when it's, you know, I mean, this is 1984. So, I mean, we see where CGI and all that stuff is today. But I mean, when he's doing all of his different scans and stuff like that, I'm like, holy shit, dude, that would be like a badass video game translation. Yeah. Or something like that. Like, I mean, some of that stuff, I'm still like, damn, you know, here we are. What, you know. Shit.
Most of it's just like random computer jargon if you try to read that stuff on the screen that makes but I mean, it's what you assume a Terminator would be saying.
Which I think it'd be funny that in that random line of code it would be like, you know, John Connor is the true evil or something like that. Like, you know,
slow
something
down frame
that,
by frame, there's, yes, probably something just jacked up.
You know, what was that TV show that used to come on and their intro was all kinds of jumbled letters and numbers? I think The Mole or something like that. And
I don't remember.
Like, and all of that stuff, like, in one sentence, like, if you were to pause it, it's like, The Mole is blah, blah, blah. And
and then later on in the movie when they, you know, he finally, they get into the final battle with him and he gets blown up in the gas tanker and you finally see the machine underneath. And even that, like, stop motion animation, it still looks amazing. And he just looks so scary.
That's what a mech warrior should have been.
I mean, he's all metal, but then it looks like he has, like, real teeth, too. And I think that's just those uncaring, glowing red eyes.
Once we start talking about Genesis, I got to talk about the teeth. So remind me when we get to that point.
Okay.
Watching the Terminator smile is just creepy.
Yes.
Yeah. Too bad we don't have a video podcast, because that was a pretty good impression.
Yeah, my visual impression is much better than my audio impression. But yeah, that final battle in the which, going back and watching it, you know, it's some kind of robotics factory too, and like, you know, in the second movie it's supposed to be like a subsidiary of Cyberdyne. That, so I wonder if, you know, in Judgment Day they basically, you know, are building Skynet from the remnants they found of the destroyed Arnold. So
yeah, from the hydraulic press or whatever.
If he had never been sent back to kill Sarah Connor, would Skynet have even been created?
I think it would have found a way. It may not have happened on the same timeline or same time frame, but I think ultimately...
And we see that in some of the later movies where they're like, you can delay it, but Skynet finds a way.
Yes. Skynet will always prevail.
Like and what was funny, like 1984... Judgment Day was like August 20-something, 1997. So we should already be dead by now, according to this original movie.
Nah, dude, we're one of the, you know, the survival troops. Like, you know, we're one of the clans of people because we're down in the nerd cave, so we're always in our underground bunker.
Or we're from one of the other movies where they, you know, screwed up the timeline and Judgment Day happened later.
Yeah.
So it could still happen at
any
point.
So we're still not there yet.
Yeah.
Bible. Our Terminator timeline. Judgment Day, you decide.
Oh, and like I said, this has been just a touchstone of pop culture. I mean, how many quotes do you hear people, you know, doing from Terminator?
Well, I mean, just that line, I'll be back, dude. That's almost as popular as, you know, the whole Star Wars.
Yeah, may the Force be with you or whatever.
Well, not only that, but the whole, you know, Luke, I am your father, or, yeah, you know.
Or even...
that's probably the misquoted version.
The whole, you know, come with me if you want to live. Or, well, in this one he doesn't do that. It's the second one where he does it. But someone always includes that line.
I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
or in the porn version of Terminator, it's live with me if you want to come.
Oh, my God. We could have lasted a lifetime without hearing that. Thank you.
All right, now I got to go back in time and stop myself from saying that.
Yes. Quick.
All right.
Where's the undo recording button?
Oh, yeah. And some of the people that were talked about possibly being the Terminator, O.J. Simpson was one of the names that come up that they wanted to
use. Yeah, I read that, and I'm definitely glad they opted against that one, and I'm sure if we fast-forwarded it about a decade, they're glad they opted against that one as well.
Oh, Yeah.
Because I think the Terminator franchise would have died with OJ.
Oh, and when he goes to the gun store too, that was another one of my favorite things. When he goes in there, he's like, starts shopping for all the guns. It's like the laser sighted 45. At that time, the laser sight's like the size
of
a scope.
Dude, it's bigger
now
than the gun.
He's like, yes, gives me the auto loading shotgun and it was in 9mm. And he's like, yeah, and I want a plasma rifle in 40 watt range. And he's like, dude, what you see is what you get. We don't have any plasma rifles.
Yeah, it's just awesome to see, you know, the futuristic stuff that he's requesting. Like, yeah, we don't have access to that. And that's what I think is kind of ironic about, you know, these films is there are much bigger guns. Like, it seems like in the dire moments, like, everybody's resorting to sidearms. Like, we should realize that 9 and 40 cal is not doing it.
It's L.A. I mean, L.A. is probably one, like, California is one of your, like worst gun control.
Yeah, but there's some of the biggest military bases out there. Like,
So Arnold's limited what he can pick up in a 7-Eleven or a freaking whatever sporting goods store. Like,
you go to a 7-Eleven for your firearms now?
Dude, you can get them behind, you rob the guy behind the counter. Those guys usually got some big guns.
All right, let's not encourage folks to go out and start robbing 7-Elevens.
If you're
and
a Terminator,
in recent news, cigar nerds, aiding and abetting criminals. let's stay away from that one.
And then fast forward to 1991, T2 Judgment Day.
And this still was a very decent film. I was really happy with Judgment Day and the way it played out. So we got, Linda Hamilton making an appearance again, of course, Arnold. We got Robert Patrick and then Edward Furlong.
Back before he went like kind of crazy.
Not as crazy as OJ, but still pretty crazy.
Yeah, and this movie, I mean, they're usually the sequel is not as good as the original. But I think T2 is one of those rare occasions where, yeah, the second one is almost more famous than the first one. I mean, there's people that maybe not have seen T1, but everybody's seen T2. And like I said, and it probably even has even more quotes or references people make with this movie than they did the original.
Well, I mean, there was quite a few more quotable lines in this film than the first one. I mean, like you said, the first film, it was, what, maybe 100 lines total? You know, this one, you know, Terminator's kind of gotten a little bit more human exposure, so you're starting to see his database of words.
Yeah, you see, I mean, Arnold's Terminator is probably either a more educated version of the original one. Like the original Terminator was probably like fresh off the assembly line. And this guy, you know, he might've been on the battlefield for a while and had learned some stuff. Or they explained that whole, like, you know, my skin will heal itself eventually. Stuff.
Even though it is I thought this was cool too, because I was like, all right, you got two Terminators now. And it was awesome to see the T-1000 come into play. Cause I was like, holy shit. All right. Now that's the kind of future that I'm envisioning the future being like.
And in this movie, since the first time Skynet tries to assassinate John Connor failed, this time he sends a new upgraded Terminator to try to kill him as a boy when he's like, you know, 10, 11, 12, something like that. And, of course, his future self reprograms a T-800 that they've captured to send back to be his bodyguard. And that was one of the cool things about this movie is you don't know who the bad guy is until they finally both Terminators meet up with John. I mean, you see Robert Patrick's T-1000, which is like a liquid metal Terminator. And then, of course, like Arnold shows up. And, you know, if you had only seen the first one, you're like, freaking Arnold's the bad guy. But, you know, once they finally meet up and cross swords at the mall, you finally figure out, oh, shit, Arnold's the good guy in this one.
Yeah, I mean, and that was kind of a revolution moment for me because I didn't see that, you know, necessarily up until that point. You know, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of foreshadowing in the first film that the Terminator is actually going to end up being a good guy.
Yeah, because, I mean, when he shows up and goes into the biker bar and has his other famous line, you know, I want your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle. He kicks the shit out of those guys. So you don't know, like, you know, if he's good or bad at that point, because he's, like, you know, fairly violent. And even when you see, you know, Robert Patrick's Terminator, when he steals the cop's car, I mean, he probably killed him, but it just looks kind of like he punches him in the gut. So it's not a clear that you don't see, like, the spike going all the way through him. So you don't know if he killed that guy or not. So until that time where they both show up and you know, he's you know protecting John, that you're like, wait a minute, the cop's the bad guy and the and Arnold's the good guy in this one.
Yeah, so I mean, there were a lot of dynamics in this film that, you know, really set the stage and, you know, gave a lot more clarity into the the franchise up to this point.
And a lot more comedy in this one too. Yes. You know, the kid,
I mean, there was a lot of
trying
action.
To teach him to be human. Yeah. You know, if you just want to shut, you know, you tell somebody hasta la vista, baby. If somebody's giving you shit, you call him dickwad. And then you can do combinations like "fuck you, dickwad" or whatever. I mean,
just keep the insults going. Yeah,
yeah. Just the relationship with him and the Terminator is—it almost turns into like a, you know, a buddy cop movie. Nearly, I mean, those two together.
It's almost if RoboCop had a sidekick kid as a with a little bit more comedy and a little bit more badass.
And I mean, this one was huge. I mean, they spent like $94 million, but they made like $519 million. It was the number highest grossing movie of 91. It won several Academy Awards for special effects. And
yeah, I mean, best sound editing, best sound mixing, makeup, visual effects. Yeah. I mean,
and
it
you
was
don't
the
see
highest
that.
Grossing film of 1991.
I mean, you don't see sci-fi movies winning, like, you know, Oscars and stuff. And I mean, and this thing was just not only financially successful, I mean, it was, you know, critically acclaimed as well. And like I said, the American Film Institute said it's probably the best, you know, sci-fi movie, best sequel, best action movie of all, you know, some of the all-time greatest action, science, and, you know, sequel.
I mean, it was just, I mean, I can't say enough about this film. I mean, you know, it's one of those that's got a little bit of everything. I mean, like you said, you know, it almost plays out like a buddy cop film. And I mean, you know, these films, although there's a little bit of violence and nudity, I mean, all the stuff's not super over the top or anything. So, I mean, it can appeal to a very wide fan base, you know, more so than some of its R-rated counterparts and things.
And when you finally see Sarah Connor, she's in a mental institute because no one believes her about the future robot. And then they have that whatever police psychologist that was in the first movie trying to analyze her. And you see him showing up, you know, throughout the other movies.
Yeah, he shows up throughout the, I think, just about every film, right?
I know he's also in Terminator 3, but I don't think he's in any of the movies past that. But, yeah, I mean, he doesn't believe any of this stuff. But, I mean, now you see, what, 10 years later of the result of the stress she went through, she's like turned herself into a warrior. She's no longer the waitress. She's like a full on, you know, tactical badass.
Yep, absolutely. And I don't know, man, the effects for the polyalloy T-1000 Terminator, I mean, dude, that stuff just looks amazing.
I mean, even compared to today's effects, I mean, that is still like revolutionary. The whole liquid metal stuff, which, I mean, that one scene where he's like the floor and then turns into that one guy, I mean, that scene alone is just amazing. And when his hand comes out, stabs him in the eye.
Yes. You know, and I was just looking here, so apparently they did an alternative ending or alternate ending to Judgment Day. Have you seen that version?
No, unless it's on the DVD, because I it's one of the ones that's not made it to my with streaming video days, and now I haven't seen any, like, you know, special DVDs in a while. But yeah, I suppose it was an alternate ending where, because, you know, they're trying to stop Skynet. They blow up Cyberdyne. They melt down the parts of the previous Terminator that was left behind and think that this is going to stop, you know, Judgment Day from happening. And there's like an alternate ending where John's like grows up to be a senator and she's like, you know, there playing with her grandkids and whatnot, and, you know, all is well with the world.
Yeah, interesting. So,
which I prefer the ending they end with the
original,
with them just riding, you know, down a lonely
off into
highway
the storm.
Into like, you know, you don't know what the future holds. At this point, we could be free, we could not be free. You know, as they said in the first one, the future isn't written.
Yeah, I mean, and part of that film too, just to back up a little bit, you know, the part where she shows up in the little Spanish camp or whatever, and it's just a couple of campers and that loadout, dude. Like, yeah. There are some badass arsenals, and I'm just oh my gosh, all the play toys. Like,
yeah, Arnold finds that minigun, and he actually smiles.
Yes.
he's like, that's you, dude. And then that whole segment with him in Cyberdyne, when, like, all the cops show up, and he's like, I've got this. He's like, but you said you wouldn't kill anybody. He's like, trust me. And he, like, just blazing with that minigun and manages not to hit anybody.
Yeah. You just see it. Civilian casualties, zero. And I'm just like, that's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that, like I said, that whole action sequence, I think, it, to me, is even better than the final fight with the T-1000. But I got to say, when they finally meet up in the metal factory, and you know, he shoots him with the little grenade launcher, and he explodes, and he's like all jacked up. I laughed out loud. So, like, I mean, I was so loud when I laughed, for some reason that cracked me up so bad. People in the theater were like, turn around to look at me when I first saw that, because for some reason he just looks so ridiculous. I mean, his head's upside down.
Yeah,
just all jacked up.
I mean, it's almost something like you would see in an old school cartoon or something like that, just how disfigured he was.
Yeah, like, I don't know why, but that scene cracked me up so bad.
So, I don't know. I'm with you, though. I think the second film here probably has more influence on me than what the first film did. But
yeah, I mean, because let me say, the first one came out in 84, so I wasn't old enough to see it in theaters. I probably saw it on home video later on. But this one, you know, 91, I was middle school maybe. So, I mean, this is like probably the first Terminator movie that I actually saw in theaters. And then, like I said, it was just so impressive on the big screen.
Yeah, I don't know. Had a little bit of a tearjerker moment there at the end too, where, you know, John's begging, you know, the Terminator not to, you know, kill himself, to, since he can't, you know, self-destruct.
Really, I mean, Arnold was like the first father figure that he had. Yeah,
I mean, that's your adult role model and figure, and, you know, the person that's been with you all your life up to this point. And I don't know, like, I almost like attribute like the puppy to, or the Terminator as like a, you know, dog that you've grown up with over the years or anything. You just don't ever want to see
it go. I mean, and, you know, technically they're only together for, you know, a few days, but
yeah,
he had grown up, you know, being bounced from like foster home to foster home, or on the road with his mom that was moving around all the time because she's trying to keep him safe for the future. I mean, he was like the first, you know, positive male role model that was like, I am here to protect you, and, you know, I'm not going to leave you. So this really was his, like, you know, first father.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, I don't know. That about wraps it up for two. Do we move on to the film I'm not so forward to looking to moving on to?
Yeah, unfortunately, James Cameron stopped making Terminators after T2, and another company bought the rights to the film, which was like Halcyon Productions or something like that.
Yeah, and this one was directed by Jonathan Mostel.
Mm.
Like, what else has he directed? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, this one's starring Nick Stahl and Claire Danes, who were, you know, pretty big actors at the time, and Christiana Loken, which she'd been in a bunch of B-movie stuff, and I'd seen her on some, like, TV roles, but she played the TX, the new experimental Terminator, which was kind of a mix between, you know, an Arnold style Terminator and a liquid with a liquid, you know, it had a robotic shell, but it was had a liquid metal, you know, skin.
I mean, I will say that
it had all kind of like internal weaponry.
It was kind of cool, you know, a little bit of a change up, finally seeing a naked girl appear more so than Arnold's naked ass, but you know.
Oh, yeah. And this one, you know, it's, yeah, basically, Judgment Day didn't happen because they did stop it. But as we know, like, it's inevitable. Skynet finds a way.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you know, basically, since Skynet failed to kill Sarah before John is born, and, you know, basically, you know, like we already discussed, sent back another Terminator to wipe out as many of the resistance officers as possible.
Yeah. Since they couldn't find John, because he's, you know, even though the Judgment Day didn't happen, he's still living off the grid just in case, and so they sent somebody to go back and kill the, you know, his lieutenants in the resistance, and, you know, eventually comes across him, and you know, like I said, this is a new model of Terminator who was designed to be kind of an anti-Terminator Terminator. So she is badass. I mean, and she can hack into stuff and you know, control other machinery and stuff, which didn't, watching it again, didn't make a whole lot of sense when she takes over the cars, because I can, the robots, all right, I'm cool, she took over the robots, but cars don't have any mechanics in it to make them drive themselves. Like, I mean, she could take over the cruise control, but it's still not, there's nothing in there that makes the car steer itself. But somehow she turned them into her own, like, slave cars.
Yeah, I mean, if Tesla had cars, or, you know, Google had the self-driving car back then, yeah, I might could have seen
I
it.
I could justify it, but a, you know, 2002 Crown Vic does not have any kind of automation in it.
Wait, you didn't have that feature installed on yours?
No.
Oh, dude, I thought that came standard.
I mean, if she took over Kit, all right, I can understand, but yeah.
Oh, shit. Terminator takes over a Kit. All hell breaks loose.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, this one just, I mean, of course you brought Arnold back, and this movie came out when he was still governor of California, too. So it's just kind of weird that the governator was going back to being the Terminator again.
You know, speaking of him being the governator, I haven't looked at any of the poll data to see how well received he was as a governor.
I mean, as
you know, I don't know. I mean, I could see him as like a Secretary of State or Homeland Division or something. I mean, it'd be like, hey, terrorist organizations, take a look at this shit. You're fucked.
Yeah, I mean, if
nothing else, he's intimidating as hell to look at.
Yeah.
Like, even old Arnold is still, like, pretty intimidating. Yeah. I'm like, damn, all right.
He might could still whip my ass. And, you know, like I said, we'll probably do a whole episode on just Arnold Schwarzenegger at some point, because, I mean, he almost deserves to be another Cigar Nerd of the Year, because, I mean, the dude been smoking cigars since forever. I mean, he's been,
I mean,
smoking,
wasn't he like,
he's been
saying,
smoking longer than I've been alive.
You know, he would get on set or something like that, and that was like one of his first things, like, hey, where's my box of stogies or whatever? And,
yeah,
you know, freaking had drones flying them cigars in and shit.
And just about every movie he finds a way to make his character be able to smoke cigars in the movie.
I mean, that just goes to show you, dude, smoking a cigar is the most badass thing you can put in your mouth, and you can put that on Urban Dictionary. Oh wait, it's already there, so you know it's got to be true.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, and this one too, I said Skynet now is, like, instead of being Cyberdyne, it's a military AI that's supposed to be able to control all our
military defenses.
Military stuff, and then there's a computer virus going around screwing up everything on the net, and they're like, well, let's turn Skynet loose on it, and that will wipe out the virus, but Skynet is the virus. So when they, you know, hook it into all the military stuff, Judgment Day starts, kicks off.
Launch all the nukes. Not just some of them. All of them.
In this movie, I mean, it's so cheesy. There's so much more, like, comedy stuff in it. And it gets kind of silly. But one of the things I do like is the fact that at one point Claire Danes doesn't really... You know, they're trying to protect her because she's going to grow up to be John's wife and his second command. But she doesn't get what's going on. And she escapes from them at some point. And... sure enough, here comes the psychologist from the other two movies, and now he's witnessed the Terminator when they attacked Sarah Connor in the mental home. So he's like, "Oh, I know all about, you know, post-traumatic stress. You know, sometimes you just imagine just the weirdest things, the things that, you know, could never have been real." And then he sees Arnold, and he's like, "Oh crap, it is real!" Yeah. Just takes off.
Well, I thought, you know, one of the revelations of this, you know, film since it just passed is, you know, the Terminator reveals that, hey, I actually kill, you know, he's talking to John, and he's like, John, I actually kill you on July 4th, 2032. And it's like, oh shit, you know.
It's like a couple years after, like, supposedly, you know, they were all sent back and defeated
Skynet.
Yeah, the year
2029 or whatever.
Yeah, and they, like I said, because this isn't the same Arnold from T2. This is a new robot that, so he's not as friendly with John as the previous Terminator. But yeah, I mean, it was fun seeing even though it was kind of cheesy, and like I said, there's some plot holes in it. It was, the action sequences were amazing. I mean, overall the movie's, you know, it's okay, but it's not great. But the action sequences are pretty badass in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite by no means. I mean, it did have success in the box office, but, you know, I mean,
I did like the elements of showing, you know, Judgment Day actually occurring and kind of John taking that role of the leader, or, you know, trying to, you know, when he's like talking to people on the radio toward the end of the movie, and seeing some of the early models of Terminator stuff. There's like the T1 like battle tank looking thing, and there's like a smaller version of what you see, the large HK Hunter, the flying Hunter killers. You see like a small drone version of that. That, so you're seeing that early progression of the Skynet Terminators and stuff, which was kind of cool.
I just wonder how many, you know, military defense people are watching this movie and say, oh, hell yeah, we need 7 of those. Like,
yeah. And of course, if you look closely, you'll see a fat Chris Hardwick in this movie.
Oh, I missed that.
He is one of the Skynet techs that, this was back before he quit drinking, so he's kind of a heavy dude. If you only know Hardwick from his current days, you might not recognize him, but yeah, Hardwick is in T3.
All right, well, it just got a couple of awesome points for that, but not too many.
All right, well, let's jump to 2009 and the one that you did not like at all.
Well, I'll say
Terminator Salvation.
I don't know if it was necessarily that I didn't like the film or if I was just trying to watch it too late at night, but I could not stay awake through the duration of this film. Like, I mean, I did finally watch it from start to finish, but it took about 3 days for that to happen. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if I just couldn't get into the characters. I didn't feel connected to anybody. I mean,
it just didn't seem
like it had a place with the previous Terminator films.
I mean, this was directed by, you know, MCG, who's done a lot of cool action stuff and cool TV stuff. He's made a lot of stuff that I like. But I've never really liked Sam Worthington as an actor who played, I believe his name was Marcus, and he was basically a Terminator that didn't know he was a Terminator. He was, you know, thought he was human and just kind of woke up in the middle because, you know, he was in prison or something, and somebody from Cyberdyne, like, you know, convinced him to donate his body to science after he was executed, and he just wakes up in the future. You know, early in the resistance, like maybe like 10 years into it. So, you know, John Connor's not even the leader of the resistance.
He's not even in command at that point.
He's just a soldier, you know, leading a chapter of the resistance. And like I said, Kyle Reese is like a young kid. He's not even met John yet. And I mean, I liked seeing the early days of the war with the machines, but I mean, there was just, I didn't really care about the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just something, and I can't pinpoint what. I mean, I don't know if I'm just terribly biased or what the deal is, but like I said, I just could not get my head wrapped around it, or maybe I just didn't understand the time frames or something enough make it make sense.
The action sequences were awesome, but yeah, I mean, I just didn't fact that there was no Arnold, there was none of the, you know, previous characters that you knew. And like I said, you've seen a Kyle Reese, but he's not as a soldier. He's like a kid. I just had a hard time caring about the characters.
I mean, I think another thing is the way the film was shot. Like, you know, it tried to, you know, kind of be gritty in a way.
Yeah,
and
it was like a wannabe Mad Max.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I mean, I was expecting much more updated and enhanced graphics and it to be much more visually appealing than what it actually was.
The future scenes we've seen in the previous Terminators were like the flash forward to that dark future, those looked better visually than what we saw in this movie. I mean, and every time you saw the future, the old one, it was like dark and night. There's like skulls everywhere. And this one, it was like most of the movie took place during the daylight hours, except for like the assault on, you know, the Skynet facility. I mean, it just did not, you know, the only thing cool about it I liked was seeing the early models of the Terminators. 'Cause you kind of see it at the end of it, the next generation. They build the Arnold toward the end of it. So you see kind of like the first Arnold coming off the assembly line. But before then, the Terminators are these big mofos with like machine gun, Gatling gun arms, and they have rubber skin. So they haven't put flesh on them yet.
I mean, envision a mech warrior without, you know, skin, and that's what you would have got with the earlier Terminators.
Yeah, they're like this bad, like, you know, freaking Ken doll rubber, rubber mannequins with guns running around.
Man, I didn't know Barbie had a thing for machines, but
hey, you find some dark stuff on the internet. Yeah, I mean, it the reveal of the fact that that guy's, you know, actually a machine, doesn't realize he's a machine. He's like some kind of experimental model that's, you know, he's got a human heart, and but he's almost like a weird RoboCop hybrid thing.
Yeah, I think he's part
100%
of
100% metal.
I think part of that, you know, they tried to almost humanize the Terminator too much, and I think maybe that's what killed it for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, and there's nothing memorable. You know, there were so many classic lines like we talked about from the previous films. I can't think of anything classic or, you know, absolutely remarkable that, you know, Salvation did that, you know, everybody's just like, oh my God, you know, and can quote even if they haven't seen the film or whatever. I mean
the A-10 Warthog's coming in and like shooting, having a dogfight with those, you know, robotic planes was pretty badass. But yeah, other than that, I'm like, I just didn't care about it that much.
So, all right, I guess now
Christian Bale is John Connor. He was kind of a dick. Like, I didn't like him. Yeah, he's like, yeah, you...
Yeah, it wasn't the John Connor that I would have expected John to be.
He wasn't really someone that would inspire, you know, great leadership, in my opinion. I mean, he was just kind of a, like, asshole drill instructor type guy.
Yeah, and I like you said, and I think that's another reason why, I mean, because, you know, John Connor previously, I mean, he was a little bit personable and everything else up to this point. So, I don't know, man. This film just didn't jive with me at all.
And, I mean, they did make a TV series for the last one season, I think, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
And you know what? I wasn't terribly disappointed with that series. I actually thought it was pretty good.
It was pretty good. I mean, it had, what's her name for Firefly, and it was like some kind of girl Terminator. I mean, you can't try to fit it into the, it's one of those, another one where there's a weird timeline, so it didn't make a whole lot of sense if you try to judge it based on the other movies. But if you just say, all right, this is something else about the Terminator, but I'm not going to try to fit it into the previous timelines. It was a fairly good movie. I mean, you see, you know, John is a, you know, teenager or whatever, and he's kind of an idiot and doesn't really want to be the hero. And it was kind of a coming of age, pre-apocalypse story. But
absolutely. And you saw that with some of the early Terminator films and stuff, too, you know, kind of with Kyle's character and stuff like that, you know, started off a little bit as a hellion, if you will, or so, you know, from that aspect, it was easier to grasp the characters. It was a little bit more believable, and the fact that they didn't just try to reboot or just play directly off of, you know, the film timelines or something, which I don't know, trying to think about it, man, it would be a cluster to try to, you know, go back and chronologically watch these films in like order of timeline, because
All right, well,
shit just gets wonky. So
we've reached that point. Spoiler alert, from here on out, we're going to be talking about the new one that just came out, Terminator Genisys. So if you don't want to hear anything, skip ahead about 15 minutes and we'll be back with some beer 30. But for y'all, those that have seen it and want to hear what we talk about it, here we go.
Yeah, all right. So I actually went earlier this morning and I saw Genisys, and I got to say that I actually really like the movie. You know, I've kind of heard mixed opinions and stuff about the Genisys film, but it closed a lot of gaps. It was definitely interesting, as you know, seeing John Connor as the adversary.
yeah,
so that I did not necessarily see coming.
And it's so weird too, because this is if you've seen the new Star Trek movies where the timeline has been jacked up, so now we're seeing stuff that's already happened, but it's in a kind of a different timeline. That's the way it's not a full reboot, and that's what kind of was cool about it, is that, you know, you see Reese going back to 1984, but when he gets there, it's not the 1984 that from the original movie that he was expecting to land in. Whatever Skynet, you know, basically takes over stuff and sends some T-1000s back to try to kill Sarah as a child now. And then someone sent back a Terminator to protect her. But we don't know who, because they're like, those records were erased to protect whoever sent this, so Skynet can't kill them before they can do it. So that it kind of explains why Arnold's looks like he does today, because he landed in the 70s and has been, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he took the long route, you know.
Yeah. So when you first see him, and the visual of it is so cool, because when Kyle and the original Terminator arrive in 1984, they've recreated those opening scenes like shot for shot. I mean, I mean, it's so good that I first thought they had just remastered some of that original video, but the original movie's owned by a different company, so they weren't allowed to do that. Plus, you know, it's kind of hard to update that stuff. But that, so they recreated that stuff, like, shot for shot with actors that look almost like the original actors. And they may even enhance that with, like, CGI. And they took, body casts of Arnold from the 84 movie that they still had and turned those into a, you know, digital copy of Arnold, and he looks like he does in 1984.
Yeah, it was kind of weird watching Arnold old self versus Arnold, you know, young self and stuff. Like, that was kind of interesting, like, seeing both dynamics there. Because it's like, and I love the line, too, you know, where he's like, you know, I'm old now, but I'm not obsolete.
Yeah, and it does a good job of, you know, not only is he, like I said, the more time he spends with humans, the more he learns. And like I said, he's got a, you know, 10, 15 year jump to learn humanity. So he's a little bit more human, or at least tries to be, because whenever he like tries to like be friendly and like smile at people, it's the creepiest thing ever.
Oh my God.
This is all teeth. He's like,
but yeah, I mean, this film brought back to me a lot like the second film. You know, there were a lot of moments that were funny. When the action scenes broke out, they were intense and, you know, had you on the edge of your seat. So, you know, this film really stuck true to me more like the originals. I mean, yeah. I was, you know, the characters felt sincere, and Emilia Clarke as Sarah Connor.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that was Khaleesi from Game of Thrones until I like looked at the credits. I'm like, holy shit, because I mean, she doesn't look anything like she does on Game of Thrones. And, you know, instead of being the girly person who needs saving, by the time Kyle shows up now, she's already a badass because she's been raised by Arnold since she was a kid.
And, yeah, I mean,
and they've been preparing, you know, for him to show up and kick ass.
Except Kyle doesn't realize that, hey, this Terminator is actually here to help us.
Yeah, they don't like each other at the start.
So that was kind of interesting.
You know, Kyle is played by Jai Courtney, which if you saw the last Die Hard movie, he played Bruce Willis's son. And, yeah, and whatever, Jason Clarke plays John Connor. Yeah, and like I said, the timeline's all screwed up. And the scenes with Reese's arrival, same thing. I mean, he shows up in the alley, steals the homeless guy's pants, and like, you know, the cops are chasing him. But the cops are T-1000s.
Yep.
And you see this rookie cop that you know, is like, oh my God, what the hell's going on?
Just absolutely clueless.
Yeah, and what's cool is they kind of jump forward in time to 2017, because since the timeline has screwed up, as we find out later, Skynet kills John Connor and replaces him with a Terminator and sends him back in time to ensure the creation of Skynet. So now, instead of it being a military computer, it's basically a phone app.
Yeah, I mean, it's Genesis. I mean, it's
supposed to be a operating system that will connect all our computers and all our devices.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about cloud computing and, you know, the advances we made there.
Yeah.
Holy shit, we're advancing to Skynet.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of doing it, because, you know, pretty much everybody's like nose deep in their smartphones now,
and phones, computers. We want all of our data to sync up real time.
I mean, you go to a hospital now, instead of, you know, carrying around pads, everybody's carrying around iPads and tablets, and, you know, and everything's connected now. So I mean, having that, you know, Skynet being an operating system is just, I think it's a brilliant way of updating that origin story.
And it makes it real, too, because it's not so far-fetched that,
yeah,
you know, it's believable. I mean, you know, and I think that's one of the things that this film sells so well is, hey, you know what? It's not all that far-fetched to think that this couldn't happen, you know? I mean, a group of military guys, you know, connect, you know, hack into, you know, the military defenses and stuff like that. I mean, it may not be AI, but, I mean, it's definitely a real possibility.
Yeah, and I thought it was cool, too, because when they jump to the future, Arnold's Terminator is damaged with a fight with a T-1000, so he can't go to the future because his skin hasn't healed up, so he has to wait for them to show back up 30 years later, so now it looks like Arnold does today. I mean, it was a cool way to have Arnold be Arnold without having to, you know, do a bunch of makeup on him and make him look like he's still in his 20s.
Yeah, I think if they had tried to take that route, this film wouldn't have had the same, you know, characterization, the same meaning, or anything else. I mean, I think I would have, you know, basically said F this, and it would have been another Terminator Salvation, just toilet film.
Yeah, I mean, and you really care about this Terminator because, like I said, he's basically Sarah Connor's father. I mean, she, like I said, she's grown up with this Terminator.
And so how many people are going to start running around now and, you know, saying, bite me as a...
Yeah, just him, every time he tries to be nice, like, he gets, like, run over by a police car, he's, like, sticking his head through the window, he's like, hello, how are you? he's just trying to fit
but,
in.
But now I need your car.
Yeah. And then, like, she, when they finally go to fight Skynet, he's like, yeah, I got a job working construction on the building, so I've hacked a bunch of stuff into the computers that'll let us in.
Before,
like,
they laid me off.
Yeah. He's like, but then I got laid off.
So, I mean, there were a lot of,
and just the rivalry between him and Kyle, because he's, like, you know, coming from an era where Terminators are evil, and he slowly kind of, Arnold gets his respect. But there's that scene where, like, they're prepping and they're seeing who can load a magazine, like, the fastest.
Oh, yeah, and you see, you know, and that's really the scene, I think, where, you know, Kyle and the Terminator get on the same wavelength, because Kyle looks over and sees the Terminator's hand glitch.
Yeah, he starts glitching
and,
up, because from,
you know.
And he basically got injured with a fight with young Arnold.
You know, basically, and Kyle looks over and just says, you know, and old even, but not obsolete.
And, you know, and when he starts glitching up, he even looks to see if Sarah's watching, because he doesn't want her to know that he is, you know, damaged and falling apart. Kind of like, you know, your parents don't want you seeing them getting, you know, old and stuff. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of touching, that relationship they had in the movie.
But I think it was kind of cool, you know, when they're, you know, in the bunker and, you know, basically the Terminator has, you know, put up, you know, some of the old pictures of him and Sarah, even brings the cassette, you know, boombox, and she's rocking out to the Ramones and stuff like that. So I thought some of those throwbacks were pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, I gotta say, you know, I took Rachel to see this film, and, you know, she really wasn't all that interested, but, you know, she actually started getting into the film, had a few laughs, and, you know, actually deemed it a pretty good movie herself. So,
and supposedly this is going to be kind of like so they've done with Star Trek now. It's been rebooted it's been rebooted in a way that doesn't negate the originals. It's very true to the originals, and like I said, it's just kind of an alternate timeline, and, you know, they're supposedly doing, this is going to be part of a trilogy, so we know we're going to get some more, you know, and supposedly Arnold is signed on for at least the second movie in the series. I don't know if, you know, if he will continue on with that, but, you know, spoiler alert, once again, you know, he gets upgraded.
and I thought that was cool how they did that, you know, basically he gets, you know, dumped in the vat of the poly alloy stuff, and, you know, he says
they're trying to build basically T-1000s or whatever, but, you know, they say, like, well, you know, they're harmless because they don't have the chip yet. They've not built the chip that can make them functional. Well, he gets kind of blown up, and his body lands in the vat of the stuff, so, you know, his chip uses the liquid metal to rebuild him, so now he's kind of a combination Arnold and a T-1000.
Yeah, I mean, and that was, you know, kind of because at the one point, you know, Kyle and Sarah, I guess they're locked in, you know, the airtight chamber or whatever, and, you know, they're basically, you know, saying their goodbyes or whatever because they're about to run out of oxygen, and you just see the liquid blade come through the wall, and you're like, oh, shit. Yeah. And then it's Arnold, and you're like, oh, shit.
He's like, I'm back. Yeah, and this time, you know, Sarah Connor gets to, you know, say the famous line, come with me if you want to live.
And I thought it was cool watching her and Kyle's relationship progress because, you know, she knew the future, and, you know, this is the film that Kyle finds out that, you know, John is, you know, his son and everything, and he's like, hey, why didn't you tell me, blah, 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 and she wants them to truly fall in love. So there was a little bit of a romance thrown in there.
She doesn't want to, like, you know, I have to be with this person because the future dictates it, and, you know, and she, you know, in the original timeline, he was supposed to die, so she doesn't really want to fall in love with someone who she knows is going to die, and... But, you know, it's new timeline, new rules, but they still end up falling in love, you know, because it's...
Well, I mean, they...
Destiny or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, they... Basically, when, you know, Kyle's like, all right, you have a choice. Your future is, from here on out, whatever you choose to make of it. And, you know, that's when, you know, she's like, all right, you know, this is real. This is genuine. And they close up with their final kiss. And, you know, the theater erupted in cheers. And,
yeah, and of course, you can't have a time travel movie without a Doctor Who in it.
Yes.
So, yeah, Matt Smith is in there. And it's funny, when I was watching the theater with a bunch of Netherworld guys, and we see him, at first see him, he's just kind of chilling in the background, not doing anything. And we're like, that's actually Doctor Who. This is one of those things where it's a fixed point in time he can't change, but he wants to come check it out anyway, so he's just kind of hanging out, watching. We're like, this is like a weird Doctor Who episode.
That's awesome. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's just a meshing of a two world. But I mean, you're messing with quantum physics, and that was the other thing too. This Arnold trying to be all scientific and stuff like that, and you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah, he's like spouting off all this, like, you know, quantum theory and stuff, and like Kyle's just like, I hate it when he talks like that. Like, speak English, man.
So
what's your final opinions of the new movie?
I would highly recommend folks to go out, see it in theaters and everything. I mean, I got nothing but positive things to say about this film. I mean, it was definitely a redemption from Salvation. And
I would almost like to see more of the war with the machines, but like I said, due to some, the original production company went out of business, and like I said, so because they were planning a trilogy based off Salvation that never happened. I like this kind of rebooting it with Arnold, and I said it kind of messes with your brain if you try to figure out how timelines work.
It definitely gave me a little bit of a headache.
But just you know, go with it. I mean, it's worth seeing. And as we wrap this up, what's your final thoughts on this cigar we've been smoking?
Final thoughts on the cigar is, you know, the strength has intensified a little bit. I still personally would have liked a little bit more of a little bit of a bourbon flavor. I mean, this cigar,
you definitely it gets a little bit stronger in the final third, and I am starting to pick up a little bit more of that sweeter flavor, but yeah, it's not overpowering bourbon.
I mean,
flavor.
I would definitely, you know, say
if you
this
pick
cigar
this up,
is
expecting an infused cigar, that you're not getting an infused cigar.
I mean, it's woody, it's oaky, it's
like you said, this is a good grilling cigar. It reminds me of, like I said, like some, you know, a fire pit, or you're grilling some steaks on the grill.
But
and it paired nicely with the bourbon. So
yeah, I mean, I would highly recommend this cigar to folks if that is your palate. You know, if you're looking for a milder smoke, this probably isn't going to do it for you. If you don't like oaky, woody flavors, it's not the cigar for you. But for me, being a barbecuer and a, you know, fan of bourbon and scotch, if you like those types of flavors, you're going to dig this cigar.
Yeah, and I promise this will be something you got to look up on YouTube is Arnold teaching Jimmy Fallon how to smoke cigars. Because that is absolutely hilarious.
Even if you're not a cigar smoker yourself, go and watch that video just because it is funny, you know, watching Jimmy try to take a stab at Arnold and then, you know, later on, Arnold just basically demolishing Jimmy.
And this, I swear this is my last Arnold impression, but he's like, yes, there is three rules. You got to, like, you roll it when you light it and look around the room. You must be cool. It don't lick the cigar. And whatever you don't coffee makes you look an amateur. And Jimmy, you violated all three rules. You embarrassed me, Jimmy.
All right, well, I'll let that one pass. That was probably one of your better impersonations.
My Arnold impersonation gets better with the more bourbon I drink.
I don't know, man. You're kind of, you go from Arnold to Swizzard from Metalocalypse, and then back to Arnold,
episode.
And it kind of confuses me a little bit. But you're on the right track now.
All right, well, that will be right back.
Stay tuned, folks.
Okay, listen to me. I'm gonna ask you one time nicely. I need your love, your blood, your Morris Cycle. I need your love, your blood, your Morris Cycle. I need your love, your blood, your Morris Cycle. I need your love. And now it's time for Blowing Smoke.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. This is our Blowing Smoke segment where we talk to interesting people who have interesting things to say. And this week we're here with Eric Howard, the Cigar Commander. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks for having me out here today. It's a real interesting setup you got here, and definitely looking at smoking some cigars with you guys and seeing.
Yeah, that's the best part of this of the show is an excuse to smoke cigars and talk to people. So tell people what you do or what your main thing is that you're working on.
Well, I actually started out with just, you know, Facebook as standard for a lot of people doing different writings and videos and whatnot. And I've always enjoyed cigars. I mean, I've been smoking cigars for 30 plus years right now. It's kind of funny little story. The Cigar Commander, as a lot of people know me, has actually kind of come about from a couple of different sources. Back in the 80s, I was actually in tanks in the Army and served with 1st 72nd Armor over in Korea. And a couple of my friends said, oh, yeah, well, you know, you ought to implement that somehow into your life. Well, so probably in the last, it's been about 3 years, I got involved with an organization called USABO, which is the United States Army Brotherhood of Tankers. Nice. And I wound up getting into a position where I became battalion commander in charge of 5 different states. And so we, you know, do different things with tanks and so forth, like just static displays, you know, painting them, teaching kids in school, things like that. And all along the way, I've always had a cigar habit, you know, and I've just enjoyed them from every aspect, all kinds of cigars. So on Facebook, you know, I was doing so many posts, I had a couple of friends actually say to me, you ought to write reviews or do reviews. And I said, yeah, I guess, kind of, whatever, you know. But kind of blew it off, and I started tinkering with a couple of videos and so forth. And it just kind of grew from there. I've gotten into a point that now I am actually writing for several different web pages, one of them being Bourbon and Broadleaf. .com and
two of some of my favorite things.
Yeah, absolutely. Gotta have that bourbon. I haven't actually done a write-up for them in probably about 3 months, but they've been kind of pursuing me to, you know, give them some more writing. I actually got more involved with another place called Tony's Cigar Corner, and it's great because he has a lot of different sources that actually supply us with cigars to do reviews. And it's great because there's
nothing better than free cigars.
Well, yeah, but there's no tie-in or responsibility. I mean, they're not counting on us, you know, oh yeah, you got to, you know, kiss up to us and make us sound good. And they just want honest reviews. And that's the biggest thing I've always promoted on my pages.
I mean, we spend a lot of time at the cigar shop, but we're not affiliated with any place, so we can go, you know, wherever and smoke whatever. And so being that independent, you it gives you a little bit more freedom to, you know, give your opinion, and people trust it. You know, if you're sponsored by, you know, Camacho or whatever, then they're like, oh, he's not gonna give an honest review on
instead of a review, you almost turn into a sales rep almost. Yeah. And you know, that's one of the things I think we've all pride ourselves in is, no, this is real, it's raw, this is, if I sit down with you and I recommend a smoke, it's because I personally enjoy that smoke.
Well, that's one of the things on my personal Facebook postings that I do is I post specifically on there that, you know, always smoke what you like because you like it. And also that I give straightforward, honest reviews. I'm not going to sugarcoat things. I've got, unlike some of the infused being sugarcoated.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I mean, out of a couple of years that I've actually been posting and getting a following, I've only written 2 what I consider poor reviews or poor scores, but I'm not ever going to talk negative or talk down about a company because somebody else might enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's
all a matter of your personal flavor preferences.
I just tell my experience with that individual cigar specifically. I mean, Gurkha reached out to me because they were looking for, I mean, they reached out to like 20 million people, but they actually sent me a private message asking me if I wanted to be a rep for them for going out there and doing things. And I said, I can't do that. I said, honestly, I like the Gurkha cigars, but there's a lot of them I have, you know, a negative feeling about, and I'm not going to go out there and sell for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to write for other cigars.
Yeah, I've bought a lot of Gurkhas just because of the name. I mean, they they do some good marketing. I mean, they got some cool names.
Oh, yeah.
I want to smoke something called Evil. But then, like, they're not all what I would call a great cigar. And they're decent, good cigars. I mean, and most of them are good cigars, but there's very few that are just absolutely astounding.
Well, let's face reality. I mean, like you said, Gurkha has some great sales ploys. I mean, their boxes are cost more empty than they do buying the cigars.
Yeah, their boxes are always impressive.
So, I mean, they've got just such a huge selection. But, I mean, I enjoy – it's kind of funny because I'm sitting here smoking a Gurkha right now. But there's so many different varieties and so many different variables between a mild cigar, a medium, full body, and so forth. So you just pick up on those things over time. You know, like I said, I've been smoking for 30 years, so it just kind of comes natural after a while.
Yeah, I think like most of the stuff we've read on the show is stuff that we've picked up because we liked them. So we've really not had anything that we're like, oh God, you should not buy this, because like I said, if it doesn't make it into like our humidor, it usually doesn't make it onto the show. So.
Well, I mean, that's also partly too because we don't have people offering to, hey, do this review. It's no, we're gonna go out there and we're having to buy these cigars to do the review. Yeah. So I personally don't want to buy a cigar that I'm not gonna enjoy.
Well, yeah, that's a big factor right there. Like you said, I mean, if you're spending your own money, you're gonna get something you want regardless. I mean, weird example. I mean, I had a Gurkha called the Triad about 2.5-3 years ago. It cost me $180 for the stick, for one stick.
Yeah, that's the ones on the shelves that say "Do not touch."
Big yeah, that's it. That's the one. Yeah, I'm the first one that had that in that same shop, and I just walked up there and got it because I could at the time. I had no idea, and I got to be honest with you, I enjoy an $8 Nick sticks a lot better. Yeah. I was not impressed with that.
Well, I mean, I've always wondered what made that $180 cigar, or if it's
marketing.
Just the sheer novelty of it.
That's something for the person that, like, this is the guy that can spend $100 on a cigar. So we're gonna make. I mean, you see a lot of luxury items that are probably no better than the generic items, but people want to buy them because of the price tag.
Yeah, because they think it's going to be so much better.
Yeah, or if it's like this is a status symbol, like I can afford the $100,000 car that's not going to last as long as like the $20,000 Honda or whatever.
True that, but like you said, it's meeting the status quo. So once again, just goes back to, I guess preference. Really, I mean,
well, that's just the thing is, it's really funny because there's a lot of people that say that picking up on different flavors and so forth is a thing that comes with age. But I've known a couple of guys that, were 20 that went straight for heavy, full body. I mean, triple Ligeros and stuff. And I was like, really? You can tolerate that? And they're like, oh, yeah, that and a big Scotch. I'm like, really? I was just shocked because they're so young and I didn't think their palate developed yet. But they were able to sit there and explain the different nuances to me and so forth. And I was really impressed. So it's a matter of everybody's, like you said, preference, but it's different tastes that you can pick up on. The big thing with explaining tastes of a cigar is you have to put it in relation to something. It's not necessarily X equals this or X equals that, and you have to be specific. It's more of, this one reminds me of a pina colada, or this one reminds me of rose petals, or whatever. And you put it in a context that other people can understand. So just like a KFC, KFC is a very popular cigar nowadays. And not to be confused with Kentucky Fried Chicken, no. For me, it's too bold of a smoke on my palate. I don't enjoy it. But a lot of people really enjoy it that enjoy barbecue, heavy amounts of barbecue. Because it smells like charcoal, it tastes like charcoal.
Yeah, that's
probably
the recommendation
for me,
I've heard. And the people that don't like it are both said it tastes like charcoal. It tastes like it came out of my my backyard grill.
Yeah.
So I've not had a chance to try it myself yet, but the people that hate it and the people that like it both give the same description.
Yeah, exactly. That's the funny part.
Well, as an avid barbecuer, I'm going to have to give this one a try then.
Well, I had ribs today, and I can tell you, I love barbecue. But Yeah. KFC just doesn't, for me, it doesn't do it. For everybody else out there, I mean, I'm sure there's people that totally like it.
And this is a question we've asked the few people we've had on here that are in the cigar, or around the cigar industry. What do you think, there's definitely been a renaissance in cigar culture in the last, 5 to 10 years. It's definitely gotten, several years ago there was no cigar shops, and now it's like every city's got its own two or three. Why do you think cigar culture has blown up like it has recently?
Well, honestly, in even more recent years, in the last year or two, the biggest thing has been, our renewal with Cuba. Okay? I mean, let me be straight. I've had Cuban cigars. I've had real Cuban cigars. Yeah. And there are so many fakes out there. 99% of the time, even if you buy it in Canada or Europe, 99% of the time, it's going to be a fake. That's just reality, because there's so many out there. Cuban cigars have actually always been the, kind of the, voodoo. You can't have them.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost taboo.
Taboo,
adds exactly to the legend of it.
So people reach for them and want them, and it's not that impressive. I'll smoke a Nicaraguan any time. But as far as why it's become a lot more popular, I think, in the last decade, let's say, honestly, internet. I think the fact that more people know about it, it's not like going into a 7-Eleven or something where you can go buy cigarettes all day long. It's people start seeing the culture of cigars more publicly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the big things for me, is, just a few times when I first got into cigars, sitting at a cigar shop or whatever, and, just the amount of people you were meeting and the community. And I mean, it just seemed like, everybody was there for one common purpose: to sit down, to indulge in something they enjoy, and to share it with good company.
Back in the day when I first started smoking, if a town had a cigar shop, it was just a shop. There wasn't like a lounge.
Yeah.
And now everywhere has at least a small lounge
with a seat
area. Yeah. And it's more focused on the social aspect of it than just, I have a humidor at my house, but I hardly smoke at home unless I'm working on something, because I prefer, even if I got cigars at home, I prefer to go out to a shop somewhere or over to my buddy's house so I have somebody to smoke with. It's just the social, you used to go out and have a beer at the bar, and now you go to the cigar shop and have a beer and a cigar.
exactly. And it's really funny because the cigar shops, like you're saying, with the culture and, getting to know people there, I can walk into pretty much any cigar shop, and there's been very few occasions. I mean, it's like anywhere. It happens where you don't click with somebody exactly right. I mean, it happens. But overall, I would say 99% of the time, I can walk into a cigar shop, not know a single person in there, be from out of state, whatever, and strike up a conversation and just have the greatest time because we're sitting there smoking a cigar, and we're talking about cigars and what they like or don't like about them, or their fancy lighter or their fancy, humidor or whatever, or just, the fact that I've got young guys that follow me that smoke Black and Milds, and, and we're always joking.
We all had to start somewhere.
Yeah, we always joke around with them, but we're like, you're welcome here because, you're asking questions about other cigars because you're wanting to learn about it and you're wanting to be part of the group by smoking a Black and Mild. Fine. I don't have a problem with that. I think that's great. I think it's great that you're reaching out and expanding, but you're not just going, this is all I can afford. I can't afford a $20 stick or whatever. Well, that's not a big deal to me. What's the big deal is they're saying, they're like writing me and asking me questions on a post or on a private message or whatever and saying, so what makes this cigar so great that you just smoked? It costs $5 or $6 or $10 or whatever. Tell me why I should get it. I'll send them one and say, here, smoke it. Now you'll know why.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started smoking, it was, when I first went from smoking the gas station cigars to real cigars, I mean, it was like the $5 Rocky Patel Edge, which is now like a freaking $7, $8 smoke, but then it was $5. And, that was the intro. I mean, that you don't have to go out and spend $20 on a smoke. You can get usually, a couple dollar, $5, just as you're taste profile and your bank improves, try something a little bit outside your price range, occasionally, just to see if it's worth that extra money.
I mean,
sometimes it is, sometimes it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some that it was like, why did I do that, you know?
I know for me, it's kind of one of those things. I started looking at price, and then, eventually I evolved from that. And like you guys have said, it's not always about spending that $20-$30 or whatever. I mean, I've found sticks that I like for $7-$8 far more than that $20 stick. So,
well, something else I would recommend is when you're in any town in America, and you find a shop that rolls their own or has their own house blend, try it. It's usually a lot less expensive, meaning anywhere from $5 to $8, depending on what you get. And some of them you're going to go, that was just a throwaway. And others, I mean, I've had some phenomenal cigars for like $6 where the guy just literally rolled them right in front of me. And everybody says, oh, well, it's not aged. Yes, it is.
The tobacco is aged.
They just physically rolled it in front of you. Yeah. So I've had some really great experiences at little tiny holes in the wall, literally smaller than this room. And great experience.
Yeah, that's that Sons of Anarchy cigar I had. That thing, when I found it, it was in a wine bar that had a little humidor in the corner. And I've not seen it in any of the stores, like, locally. So I was like, man, this is an interesting find. Like I said, you'll find some of these rare cigars occasionally in these hole-in-the-wall places where they've not been picked up by everybody that comes in.
Yeah. And the other thing is every so often you'll find some of these funny-looking cigars, odd shapes, mixes, blends, whatever. And people will go, I don't know what that is, so I don't want to try it. I'm the first one to jump on it because it's so unique, and I'll say, I want to find out what this cigar is about.
Yeah, I mean, we stayed away from, the Leaf cigars by Oscar, and it, just looking at it, I don't know where to begin, so I kind of stayed away. And, then another company, Foundry Cigars, they've got a lot of odd-shaped ones, and every cigar I've had by Foundry has been like a gem to me.
Foundry
I've loved
is-
them.
I'm not sitting here and trying to plug different cigar companies, but Foundry for me is absolutely fantastic. They have one. The only problem with Foundry is that they produce a certain cigar and then they stop production and they never re-release it. So you get to liking something and then it disappears and you can never get it again. So, I mean, there's a whole variety of them. The only one I've seen stay true is their low end called the Chillin' Moose, and
I've had that one.
That's a good little inexpensive cigar. You can get a box for like $40-$50.
All right, as we kind of wrap this up, what is your methodology for reviewing a cigar? Like, what's the steps if someone wants to actually not just enjoy it but write about it, that when you sit down to scientifically look at what you're smoking and talk about it?
Well, obviously, you got to know some of the terms that people are going to recognize. I mean, you got to understand the construction of a cigar. You got your cap, the body, the foot, things like that. And you want to be able to explain that in writing. The other thing is you want to be able to know the difference of how it's manufactured, how it's made. What kind of leaf is it used? What region is it from? Is it Nicaraguan? Is it Ecuadorian? Things of that nature. So that can all come with just a little bit of minor, tiny little bit of research on the internet, just from other posts, other reviews, things like that. You can usually pick up on it. You can check the manufacturer website. A lot of manufacturers will actually have a chat interview with you where you can do a Q&A with them, and they'll be happy to answer questions for you most of the time. And if you tell them you're going to post it in a review, they'll be very specific about certain questions and answers for you and be able to answer them. So that helps. The other thing is just be honest about your feelings about the cigar. Don't sit there and sugarcoat it. Don't try to make it sound all glorious. Just write what you're thinking. I typically try to explain them in terms that people will understand. A smokiness or a rose petal scent or, grassy field or something of that nature. the biggest thing is when you're smoking a cigar, if you want to review it, close your eyes, sit back, puff on it slow, enjoy it, let this, you know, the flavor kind of float in your mouth a little bit. Pick up on it. If you start to think you feel like you're picking up on something, just sit back for a minute, take another puff, see how it comes out, and then write down what your thoughts are at that moment. And then you can piece together how you want to word it later. You just, you know, put down your thoughts of what you're experiencing. The other thing is, you know, try to describe it as best you can in every aspect, from size, length, the gauge it is, if you can find that out or no. And then, you know, price perspective, where you got it, things like that. Prices vary from place to place.
All right. And finally, you know, where can people check out your reviews and follow what you do?
I appreciate that. A lot of people can follow me on Facebook if they have an account, which almost everybody does nowadays. Yeah. I'm listed under Facebook / Cigar Commander with no spaces. I also have a blog on WordPress that is listed as Cigar Commander. And, of course, the other two places I mentioned earlier being bourbonandbroadleaf.com, and more recently and on an ongoing basis over at tonyscigarcorner.com.
All right. And with that, we'll be right back with the next segment.
Stay tuned.
Hey, man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And we're back with Beer 30. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
This week we are drinking Burnt Hickory Big Shandy Graham Cracker Stout.
Yeah, another local beer. We did about the Fighting Bishop before. Yeah, Big Shanty out of Kennesaw, Burnt Hickory out of Kennesaw. But Big Shanty was pretty much the original name for the city of Kennesaw, where this beer is born. And yeah, it's... I mean, this would be like a good breakfast or dessert beer, because the freaking graham cracker taste just like hits you in the face
it's crazy, because it's intense on the initial sip, but as soon as it hits the back of your mouth, it kind of fades out and you get that nice hoppy stout, you know,
yeah,
taste that you would expect out of a stout beer.
Like strong roast and hop bitterness, but yeah, it's definitely got a lot of sweetness up front, because it's made with real graham crackers and honey in the mix. And like I said, I'm digging it. I mean, this is like I said, that graham cracker taste up front is just insane. I mean, this would definitely make a good, breakfast beer or, like I said, a dessert beer.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that, dude, I would love to take this and, you know, try to make like an alcoholic s'mores out of.
Yes. You get, the Big Shanty and, like a chocolate stout and some of that marshmallow flavored vodka. I mean, straight up alcoholic s'mores. Just mix them all together.
I don't know how that would blend together, but...
We could try it, man. That'd be something to try to drink at like a camping event or something.
I mean, we're going to have
liquid s'mores with your s'mores.
I mean, I don't take offense to this, folks, but I mean, I would almost dub that a panty dropper. I mean, we might be onto something there. I mean,
yeah, some of the like whatever three tiers chocolate stout with some Big Shanty and some, you know, marshmallow, or even melt some marshmallows in your beer concoction if you don't want to do the marshmallow vodka.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, oftentimes the beer and vodka combination, I can't recall too many times ever trying to mix those two, but
yeah,
I don't know
very well, but.
Dude, being by a campfire, though, with the...
S'mores, liquid s'mores. I mean, you're going to be drunk and, you know, pass out in your tent or in the woods like I have done on camping trips.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't, you know, a huge ABV, but it's up there at 9%.
It's 9%, I mean, so it's definitely kind of...
I mean, it's what you would expect out of a stout. But, yeah, I'm definitely with you. A great breakfast or a dessert beer.
I mean, even the smell. It smells like sniffing a box of honey graham crackers.
Oh yeah, dude, the smell is just absolutely awesome. You know, I'm even,
if you're out of milk, just pour this in your graham cracker crunch cereal, and it'll fit right in.
Yeah, I mean, as this beer is coming more up to temperature, I mean, I'm definitely picking up some notes of chocolate and even some vanilla in there. So it's very complex, but this is a very relaxing beer. I mean, this is the type of beer you just want to sit with. I mean, here we are. We're sharing this bottle, and you just want to kind of relax and just mellow out. I mean,
yeah, I want some dessert now to go with this. Get a nice cheesecake or something.
To the foods library.
Yeah.
You know, as far as I'm on the untapped scale, I'm at a 4.5 on this one.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a solid 4 for me. And the added benefit, you burp, it tastes like graham crackers. So,
yeah, I mean, the aroma, the flavor, the, I mean, everything's just...
I'm not drunk, sir. I've been eating more. So.
Yeah. Sir, you smell like a graham cracker. Oh, yeah, I ate a whole box. I mean, I drank a whole box. I mean, I don't know, officer.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this beer. So, with that, we'll be right back with science.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science!
And welcome back. It's time for science!
Yeah, time to get my education on and whatnot.
You ready to learn some stuff, Brad?
I am. What do we got in the science world today?
We have got... jetpacks, yo.
All right. Don't get my hopes up, because for like many, many years now, people's like, oh yeah, just another year away, we're going to have jetpacks, and I have yet to have a jetpack.
Well, I mean, we were arguing about you know, having hoverboards, and everyone's like developing hoverboards now. We talked about it in other science. I think even Lexus has come out with a model of a hoverboard that they're showing. But Martin Jetpacks says you can have your very own jetpack by late 2016. As long as you got the money, they got the jetpacks.
Do we have a price estimate on this yet?
Well, it's they're going to run between $150,000 to $200,000. So
yeah, I'm going to have to wait on the economic version to come out. We're going to need to drop several zeros from the end of that price tag before I get a jetpack.
Well, maybe they'll have them for rent. I don't know. But yeah, this thing is, they say that they've announced this like a few years ago, but now they've finally got to the point where it's ready to be released to the public. And these things, you know, it's pretty, it's got like a, whatever, 4,200 horsepower engine that can travel up to 46 miles per hour for like a maximum range of like 20 minutes. So it'd probably run about 22 miles in a straight line before you got to stop and gas up again. But it can also get up to a height of 3,280 feet. That's damn high.
So the article, what was that horsepower? Because I'm like, the way this is written, it's powered by a V4.
Never mind, V4. I'm
like, looking... and I'm like, wait a second. Yeah. What the heck is a V4?
I was looking at my notes, yeah. And not the thing. Yeah, it's a V4 200 horsepower engine.
Okay. That makes, I'm like, 4,200 horsepower. Holy crap. Like, I'm not going to survive the G-force. I'm going to be dead.
Yeah, and like I said, it's not like a rocket pack, like for example, the you know, the old Rocketeer movie or whatnot. So it's not kind of like a jetpack we've seen. It's more of a...
So I'm not going to be able to get my Jet Jaguar on just yet.
It's more of a personal helicopter, nearly. It has like two induction fan engines. So you're almost like a human size, you know, drone. So you got like two big fans strapped to your back that allows you to fly like you have a jetpack.
Yeah, the contraption looks pretty interesting. I mean, at least it does have landing gear. I guess at least that way you don't have to worry about your shins, you know, going and puncturing up to your lungs on landing.
It looks like a fairly sizable device. So yeah, it wouldn't be like, you know, you see people in jetpacks being able to just land on their feet. I'm betting that thing's probably a little heavy to like support by your by your own legs.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you didn't break a leg, you'd probably at least tip over from the
weight.
Well,
I mean, I would encourage folks, hey, you know, unless you're doing the strongman competition or something like that, try strapping a four-cylinder engine from your Toyota or Honda or something to your back. See how that works out for you.
They're thinking this is also going to be something big for, like, first responders and emergency services that can, you know, like, yeah, if you can go to something in a straight line versus having to go through roads and whatnot. Or even...
Well, I would say, you know, luckily, I can't tell you how many times I see emergency vehicles, lights, horns, sirens, everything blaring, and people still driving 40 miles in front of them, both sides, not letting the freaking... So, you're cutting down on traffic, at least, so regardless of...
Or even in, like, search and rescue situations where you're having to, you know, search a large area of land, you know, it might not be feasible to have a helicopter, because... But for... I mean, that's... even $150,000 is a lot cheaper than buying a full-on helicopter. And, you know, so if you needed to, say, search like a wooded area or something like that, you know, you can get the eye in the sky to help you look.
I mean, you know, plus it does have, even with the landing gear and stuff, a much smaller profile. So, you know, those hard-to-get places, I mean, I could definitely see that. I don't know. I'm almost wondering, you know, when there's a, you know, airplane or something like that that has a pad that can extend out and, you know, people launch to get to some of those hard-to-get places, you know, since you got that 20-minute fly time.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody's, like, needing to, you know, say, raid a building, a couple SWAT officers drop in on your roof in one of these things instead of coming in through the front door. Yeah, people aren't going to expect that.
Have a freaking minigun attached to one side of it. I mean...
Hell yeah. I mean, that's some, like, straight video game stuff right there. You start putting weapons on these things. Speaking of weapons...
Hold on. I think we need to patent this idea before we move any further. With that, stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this next patent.
Jetpack paintball. That's the new sport of the future. Aerial combat with paintball.
Paintball is not cheap to get involved with. Now you're adding $150,000 to $200,000 price tag on top of it. I'm out, dude. Like,
hey, man.
You might be balling outrageous, dude. But...
Yeah, right. All right. As I was saying, speaking of weapons, NASA is looking at a plan to nuke asteroids. You know, it's not just the movie Armageddon anymore. This is real life.
Yeah, now, I read an article the other day, and I don't know if this is the same one or not, but the article I read basically said that, you know, trying to attack an asteroid head-on, you basically aren't going to do anything to it. But I read is they were going to nuke the... detonate the bomb before to try to knock the asteroid off its trajectory. Is that...
There's a couple of different plans they're working on. They're working with the National Nuclear Security Administration, and you know, there's Earth getting hit by an asteroid is not something that's completely unheard of. In fact, there's a June 30th was National Asteroid Day, a day that they try to raise awareness of the threat posed by near Earth objects. And try to get the world governments to cooperate on some kind of, you know, Armageddon-style plan. And one of their, well, because like I said, there was a meteor hit in 1908 that wiped out 800 square miles of forest in Siberia. I mean, if that had landed in a major city.
Yeah, no, that would have been horrible.
Luckily, so far, all the meteor strikes we've had have landed, like, out in the middle of nowhere. So
well, I mean, you
great
know.
Disasters.
I mean, the
I mean, they had that one in Russia a couple of years ago. Where, like,
and I mean, it didn't even have to hit the ground.
Air, but
it blew up in the air.
Blew out windows and everything else. So it's definitely a real threat. You know, one of their plans is calling for a two-part spacecraft. Like, the first part of the spacecraft will crash into the asteroid and knock a hole in it. And then the second part of the aircraft will drop a nuke in the hole and hopefully blow it up. And they say that, you know, most of the asteroid will be destroyed, but the problem with that is there's still a lot of little pieces that, you know, some of them may not burn up in the atmosphere. So
yeah, I mean, that's why the article I read, I you know, kind of leaned toward it thinking, you know what, this might be the way to go. Now, this is under the pretense that you've got years of advanced warning and enough that, you know, even if you knock it off, you know, just inches by the time that...
Yeah, that's their other plan, is to have a robotic weighted spacecraft that they will literally send up to knock into the asteroid and knock it off course. But the key to that is being able to detect them when they're far enough out. Because, you know, even if you move it a little bit over time, it's going to, you know, be way off the target. But if we don't have the technology to detect these things when they're, you know, a year or two out, then we kind of screwed. So
that's I think that's kind of been the focus. Like, you know, they've
detection of the asteroids.
You know, I think they've been working on detecting, you know, like mile-sized objects or anything over a certain size, but, you know, there's still a lot of smaller objects that, you know, they're discovering hundreds of those a day, and, you know, like we've already seen, it's only a matter of time. I mean, the Earth has been hit many times over the course of its history. I mean, yeah, I think it's naive to think that it can't happen.
I mean, supposedly that's what, you know, took out the dinosaurs, so, yeah, it's not only possible, it's damn likely that it would happen eventually. So we've got to start kind of come together and work on these detection technologies.
If we start hearing the name Ellie mentioned, we know it's bad. Because that doesn't mean that he's having an affair with a girl named Ellie. No, that's end of life event.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that.
Yeah, it was in, back referencing our disaster segment, it was one of the disaster films I watched.
Ah, okay.
Because the guy basically lost, like, his wife, his kids, everything he owned because the wife thought he had an affair because she would always hear the name Ellie and he would close all the doors and everything got real secretive, but nope, impending asteroid.
Hmm, okay. Something else is cool, hover bikes. Like, the freaking hover bikes from Star Wars are a real thing now.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, I'm looking at the little video here, and, dude, I mean, it looks like an oversized, you know, quadcopter drone. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it's like a quad rotor, but, you know, you ride it like a motorcycle. And, yeah, I seen this video of it earlier when they were kind of working on this concept. But now the, you know, Department of Defense is actually investing in these. Made by Malloy Aeronautics, but the Department of Defense wants to build like truly functional full size, you know, hover bikes for, you know, possible military implementation.
Yeah, this thing looks awesome. I mean, what kind of range could you expect on this? I mean, I assume that this thing is all battery powered or powered electronically somehow. I mean, I don't see any kind of like, you know, fuel cells or anything like that on it. So
it's definitely battery powered. I've not heard anything about what the potential range on it is, but I mean, these battery powered drones have some pretty good range on them. Plus, with it being battery powered, not powered by internal combustion engine, they can make these things very quiet too. So, I mean, they'd be able to sneak in on stuff or use them for, you know, observation or whatnot, or even part of the thing is talking about them being remote controlled like a drone and being able to, you know, send them in to, you know, say you got a team out somewhere and they need to, you know, be extracted instead of a whole helicopter coming in to pick them up. You send a few of these hover bikes in by remote control and then they jump on them and ride off to wherever they need to go.
Yeah.
I mean, or if they ride them into a battle, they can, you know, jump off and then the things can fly back to base on their own and they don't have to be, you know, left out there.
I mean, one of the cool things I'm reading here, you know, kind of going back to that whole rescue emergency first responder thing, but apparently, this thing can be compacted down to a fairly small size, and that way it's easily transported across borders and other things.
They could probably
things,
bring in,
so.
In like, you know, a few backpacks and then snap it together when they need to make a fast exit. So, yeah, it's cool. I mean, it looks pretty much like how you would think one of the Star Wars hover bikes would would actually work in real life.
That's awesome. Dude, just wait. I can't wait till we start like having hover bike races and stuff. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, so the hell of my Harley, man. I want to get one of these.
Can we not just have both? We can have Harleys and hover bikes and hoverboards.
Sky Harleys, man. That's the way to go. That's the thing of the future.
We're going to have Scarleys.
Speaking of like weird esports, I saw a thing today, and it's not in my notes, but apparently America has challenged Japan to a giant robot battle in the next year. There's a company, and I think it's like Megabots or something here in the U.S., has built a 12,000-pound robot. And there's, I guess, a competing Japanese company that's built like a 9,000-pound robot. So we have sent them a challenge that we want to have a robot battle to the death within the next year. I would pay to see this.
Yeah.
Freaking full-scale mech warrior? This is badass.
I don't want to be on the losing end of that battle, though. Like, like I hope we have the ways to take down said robots. I mean, dude, you of all people with the impending robot doom and everything.
These aren't
be
actual robots. These are something people control. There's no AI in these things. There's somebody in a freaking cockpit.
Yet. There was no AI when Skynet was developed. Well, there was. But
Skynet is the AI. But hell yeah, watching BattleBots on TV has always been awesome, but freaking full scale, like giant version of BattleBots.
I just want to go back to Celebrity Deathmatch.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there we go. Clay robots. I mean, that way they could easily be destroyed. You know, it starts getting a little bit wonky. I mean, you just roll it up into a ball and put it back in its plastic container and you're good. You're not doing that with a 12,000 pound robot.
Well, speaking of the impending robot apocalypse and being the Terminator episode, you know, we had to talk something about AI. There is a Seth Bing is a game developer who also happens to be a Super Mario World speedrunner champion, and he has developed a computer that can learn to play Mario.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because you know, he's talking about developing the program, and you know, when he originally developed, like, the computer didn't know how to press the right button to make Mario move or anything like that. So, you know, the computer basically started going through the mathematical calculations and, you know, eventually learned how to, you know, start decimating entire levels.
Yeah, the name of this program is called Mar-I-O, which Mario. But yeah, it uses genetic algorithms. It basically, computer almost learns like a human brain, where it kind of, you know, looks at all the possible outcomes of a problem and eventually zeroes in on whatever the best solution for that problem is. And like I said, as it keeps trying to go through the level over and over again, it eventually learns, you know, the best way of going through the level, just like, you know, you or I do when if we were trying to play a game like this.
Yeah, I mean, basically using logic connections that mimic, you know, the neurons in the human brain, and those neurons in turn send signals to communicate or to coordinate. Dude, I'm not okay with self-learning technology. Like, humans suck. And the fact that we're developing, you know, technology that can learn on its own and everything, I'm like, all the bad habits we have, we're going to give to technology. And eventually, the impending robot doom is going to be upon us.
I mean, it's bad enough when, like, Japanese kids kick my ass online playing video games. Now I got to worry about some damn computer doing it. No, I do not support this technology. All right, well, that about wraps us up for science. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned, folks.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. We got an extensive lineup once again for this week. Lots of movie news, some video game news, and just some cool stuff going on in general.
I'll take your word for it.
Yep, that's all you can do. It's my segment.
Yeah, I've not looked at any of your research, so.
Wait, there's research involved in this?
I'm as surprised as the listeners.
Well, I will tell you, speaking of surprises...
I mean, I came over here to set off fireworks, and you're like, let's record something. So, like I said, I'm not prepared.
Yeah,
to.
I think I got a minor concussion, so just have to bear with me. Damn mortal tube
right,
explosion.
What's first on your agenda?
First on the agenda is Deadpool officially, quote, hard R rated. And,
yeah.
I'm excited because had they had tried to go in PG-13 with Deadpool, I would have been very disappointed.
Yeah, because we talked about the rumor earlier that it was going to be a PG, and I was like, there's no way you can do that. It's going to be another one of those freaking Wolverine Origins crap fests if they did that. But no, the producer and director both like officially said in an interview, no, this is going to be a hard R comedy. We're going to be in strip clubs, and like he said, we're going to be far away from the shiny X-Men universe. This is going to be Deadpool as it should be done.
Yep, I mean, this is going to be very much like the comics violent, obscene, you know, fourth wall breaking Deadpool as we know it, and that just makes me anticipate this movie so much more.
Yeah, and with this article, they posted like an official picture of, you know, we've had some leaked photos, but this was like one of the first official photos with Reynolds in the costume.
Straight out of the freaking comic book,
it does.
It's awesome.
It looks like he jumped right off the page. It is freaking epic.
Absolutely. So super stoked about Deadpool. So we'll keep you folks posted as we get more breaking news. And,
speaking of Deadpool, go to YouTube, watch Bat in the Sun's Superpower Beatdown with Deadpool and Domino versus Joker and Harley Quinn. It is epic.
I think I nerdgasmed just a little bit.
Yeah.
Up next, too. Up next, Top Gun 2. So, you know, fans...
wait.
Yeah,
danger zone.
So it looks like Top Gun 2, Tom Cruise is going to be pitted against some drones. And so this should make for some epic dogfighting.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting because even like, you know, in the, you know, there's in modern day warfare, they've kind of gone away from the dogfighting. You don't see that as much, you know, and there's a lot more drone warfare. So it's going to be interesting how they're going to incorporate that into, you know, this movie. I'm sure Tom Cruise is probably going to play like a senior instructor or something now, because, you know, the first one ended with him, like, you know, going to Top Gun to teach people. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how all the, you know, Hollywood magic and everything else with the updated technologies and stuff. I don't know. I'm excited about it. I mean, this is one of the movies that put Tom Cruise, you know, career on the map for me. So
I heard his new wingman is a wisecracking AI called a Duck.
Oh, that's awesome.
The probably the hard drive crashes toward the end of the movie, and he has to deal with the pain of losing another partner. That's my theories anyway. I may be wrong.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. We'll put that theory to the test. So quick, archive this episode. All right, some news that I'm disappointed about because, god damn it. I got to ask you, Joe. We're talking about Spider-Man and the person they've casted. Who the fuck is Tom Holland? Has anybody heard of this Joker?
He's the new Spider-Man.
Okay. He looks like he's a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah, he's actually 19, but he does look like he's 12. And I was just looking up his whatever credits on IMDb, and he has been in nothing I have ever heard of. So I don't know how he got this role as Spider-Man, because one of the original rumors was possibly Asa Butterfield, however you pronounce his name, from what the hell is that movie he's in? Ender's Game.
Yep.
And I'm like, I could see that kid playing a young Spider-Man, because the modern MCU looks like it's more based off of the Marvel Ultimate Universe, and in the Ultimate Spider-Man and all the animated stuff, it's a younger Spider-Man. So I figure that's the way they're trying to go with this. But, I mean, this kid is definitely an unknown element because I have never heard of him before.
Yeah, I don't know. Unfortunately,
he's definitely not done any kind of
action. I shouldn't
judge
a book by its cover. Movie. I know, but this just looks like an attempt to make a teenage heartthrob movie. And I don't know.
I don't even say that because he looks like a dork. So,
I mean, I could very easily see this kid playing a pale, pasty white vampire in the next Twilight film or something.
True.
I mean, that's the impression I get anyway. It's going to be directed by John Watts. He was the director of Cop Car, which debuted earlier this year at Sundance Festival. Can't say I've ever heard or seen that movie either.
Yeah, I don't know who any of these people are. So.
I don't know, man. I've
not really cared about any of the Spider-Man series so far. I mean, now that, it's back into the kind of Marvel's hands, hopefully it's at least going to have a better script, better story, but the people they've got running it, I really know nothing about.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right there with you. A bit of tragic news that just came out a couple of days ago. Andy Griffith has passed away at the age of 86. So, sad passing there in TV news.
Yeah, I mean, freaking, who didn't grow up on watching, whatever, Andy Griffith Show reruns and even, Matlock.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was in high school, anytime we'd get in trouble, there was one of our administrators, and he was semi-chill as long as your infraction wasn't too over the top. What he would do is basically call you into his office, and you would sit down for an hour and watch Andy Griffith episodes with him. And he would kind of lecture you as you go. So,
wow.
It was kind of interesting. So it definitely brings back some memories to me. And up next in TV news, something I'm excited about, the Flash Season 2 premiere date and the episode title have been revealed. So that's exciting. Looks like the premiere has just been released. It'll be The Man Who Saved Central City, and it will premiere October 6th, 2015.
And the day after will be the premiere of the new Arrow season. So,
yeah, I'm like you. I got to get caught up on my DVR backlogs because I'm going to be watching premieres right as the stuff, the new season start kicking off. And that's not going to allow a lot of ample time. I'm going to be plastered to the couch, folks. Something else I'm kind of excited about. Clarkson, Hammond, and May get some closure from Top Gun. Or Top Gear, Top Gun.
If you haven't paid attention, apparently they got into Clarkson apparently punched one of the producers or something, fired from Top
Human
Gear.
Resource.
But then his partners that have been with him on that show forever, they're all like, "Well, we're not renewing our contract. We also quit." So, but now they're starting their own car TV show that's going to be on Netflix, and it's pretty much the entire original cast. Plus, I think one of the original directors also left, and he's going to be directing the new show on Netflix. So,
yeah, and
not only Netflix, but also Amazon. Awesome.
Yeah, so basically internet TV. I don't know, man. I love the digital age, so
Yeah, I could sit there and binge watch some not Top Gear, whatever they're going to call the new show.
Absolutely. Well, a little bit of an upset for the PC gaming folks out there, as Batman Arkham Knight has been pulled from shelves due to some bugs and some issues that have been going on, basically making the game virtually unplayable at times. So, you know, I think this is one of those examples where, you know, the video game studios are a little bit too eager and jump the gun before they go through their beta testing and weed out all the bugs and potential issues.
Well, I mean, they've had no problems on the console gaming. It's just for some reason the computer version of it is not living up to it.
I don't know, man. But see, I'm not one of these folks that'll take a console over a PC. I mean, there's a time and a place for all the systems. But, you know, kind of being an avid PC builder and a PC gamer myself, I mean, unfortunately, you see it too many times where either, you know, the games are too embedded with DRM and everything, you know, and I understand we got to try to prevent piracy and all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, come on, game studios, give the folks, the end users, a final finished product that's shiny and polished that functions well out the box. My pirated version shouldn't work three times better than this version I paid $60 for.
I've never been
a
big PC gamer when it comes to action games. I mean, for PC, I've always played like either shooters or some kind of like, you know, real-time strategy game. With something like, you know, Batman, I want to have a, you know,
But I mean,
PS4 controller or Xbox controller in my hand.
I mean, even, you know, that's like, you know, right now on my PC, I mean, I run either an Xbox controller, I've got adapters that I can throw PS3 in there. I mean, we're at an age where it's no longer just keyboard and mouse controls. So
I mean, you're going to get better graphics computer, but it seems like the console versions are always way more dependable. But as far as the game itself goes, it's been getting nothing but great reviews from what
Absolutely.
I've seen. I've yet to lay my hands on it. I've got to upgrade. This is the game that's going to make me upgrade to a PS4.
Well, I got my hands on a PS4, so we just need to get a hands on a copy of the game, and maybe we can get some gameplay under our belts and do a official Cigar Nerds review.
What? I'm Batman.
You just want to think you're Batman. And kind of continuing on with the video game role, Universal Parks and Resorts basically has teamed up with Nintendo and announced a deal last week to create Nintendo-themed attractions at all their Universal parks. So they're going to install major attractions featuring, you know, some of the most famous characters and games at all the parks. So, you know, I'm super stoked about that. Like, you know, it'd be awesome. And they've got a go-kart track, so you could actually, you know, act out Mario Kart.
Yeah, that'd be some pretty... I mean, you do it with some kind of, like, laser tag stuff that, you know, cause... You know.
Dude, can you do live-action Duck Hunt?
Yeah, it's called Duck Hunting.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah, but, I mean, if they rigged up some golf carts with like, you know, you run over certain parts of the track and activates like some kind of weapons where you can like shoot a
or just shoot
something in a
cart for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, or locks up your brakes or something. You know, the little basically digital
that or you know kind of be on a track or something. So you know, oh, banana peel and your cart starts spinning or something. It could be interesting. So I don't know. I just don't want to get in a fight with Donkey Kong or something.
Some kind of like you know Legend of Zelda. Yeah. I'm trying to think of like Nintendo games that would translate into a ride, and I'm just not coming up with anything.
Let's see. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
I've
not played Nintendo since Nintendo 64, so I don't know if there's anything new that would make a good ride.
Yeah, I mean. I mean, I've played Wii, and I've got a lot of Wii games, but, I mean, I'm playing those for the updated games that I played on original Nintendo. So, I don't know. I'm curious to see how it plays out. I mean, always a good excuse to get out and go get in some sunlight, get us some vitamin D. I mean...
Sunlight's overrated.
I mean, you say that now. You say that now. After this weekend at being at Warped Tour and stuff like that, I feel like I need to be in the sun a bit more because I was not... weathered for that experience.
This means you just stay out of the sun like I do.
Bastard. So that's really about what I got as far as nerd news. Joe, is there anything floating around that you've...
Well, there's rumors that Tyrese Gibson from, yeah, everybody should know him now from the Fast and the Furious franchise, is supposedly might be the new Green Lantern in the DC universe.
Oh, that's pretty exciting.
He's been tweeting about it and kind of has been, you know, slyly saying that this is something that might be in the works. So with Comic-Con coming up in the next couple of weeks, maybe we'll get some kind of official announcement that he might be playing. Hal Jordan is one of the, but it, the other one is Jim Jones or I can't remember his name. It's been a while since I've read Green Lantern.
I think it's Jim Jones, if I'm not mistaken.
No, Jim Jones is the guy that, like, you know, had the cult and the drink was named after him.
I know Jim Jones strictly for alcoholic reasons. Phenomenal mixed drink.
But anyway, so he may get to put on the green tights. He's made some tweets about taking the Lantern Oath and posting some picture fan art of him.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some Photoshop versions and stuff like that I've seen. So I don't know. I mean, I think he would be an awesome at that role.
One of the rumors I've saw that is that the new, whenever that does come out, that there's going to be, it's going to be two Green Lanterns. They're going to have the original Hal Jordan, which will be played by Chris Pine from
was that almost a Chris Pratt?
No, yeah, pretty much from Star Trek, and then him as the other Green Lantern.
Awesome, awesome. So, all right, well, that's what I got, folks.
Be sure and check us out on the ESO Network and on our website, CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on Twitter and Instagram as @CigarNerdPod. Go to our Facebook page, like us, share us, do all that cool stuff. We're on iTunes, Stitchers, and wherever podcasts are available. And with that, we'll be back. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.